from the conclusions of the several meetings that President Trump and Chairman Kim have had over the last 2 years. Their vision is what guides our team.
North Korea says it doesn't want to talk about nukes. It's Thursday, July 9th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us online at Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube, all at VOA Asia. Also ahead, growing calls for China sanctions, pandemic pressure and reopening schools, high-tech boycott and old-tech caves, diversity visas, and South Korea's K-cops. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump says he is open to another summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, even as Pyongyang signals it is uninterested in resuming stalled nuclear talks. We hear more from VOA correspondent Bill Gallo in Seoul.
Twice in the past week, North Korea has said it has no interest in resuming nuclear talks with the United States. But that didn't stop U.S. President Donald Trump from saying Tuesday he believes North Korea does want another summit. In an interview with Gray Television, Trump said he would certainly meet North Korean leader Kim Jong-un for a fourth time. Such a meeting, he said, could be profitable. Trump and Kim have already met three times, but the summits have produced few tangible results. North Korea has boycotted the talks for months. It's upset the U.S. won't relax sanctions or provide security guarantees in exchange for limited steps to dismantle its nuclear program. Last week, a senior North Korean diplomat said more talks would only benefit Trump. On Tuesday, North Korea's foreign ministry said its stance on the issue is as clear as day. Speaking Tuesday in Seoul, Steve Biegun, the top U.S. negotiator on North Korea, downplayed those remarks. He also said he does not take guidance from North Korean foreign ministry officials.
I take my guidance from the conclusions of the several meetings that President Trump and Chairman Kim have had over the last 2 years. Their vision is what guides our team.
Earlier this month, South Korean President Moon Jae-in said he would like to see Trump and Kim hold another meeting before the U.S. presidential election in November. Some analysts have questioned whether Trump has other priorities. With just 4 months to go until the election, Trump is badly trailing Joe Biden, the presumptive Democratic nominee, in the polls. North Korea is not seen as a major issue in the U.S. election. But if Trump could revive the North Korea talks, it could help highlight what White House officials had once heralded as a signature Trump foreign policy achievement. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
There are growing calls for Britain to also enact sanctions against human rights abusers in China, after the first such measures were imposed against dozens of individuals from Russia and Saudi Arabia. The first so-called Magnitsky sanctions were announced this week following years of campaigning by friends and family of Sergei Magnitsky, a Russian lawyer killed in 2009. As Henry Ridgewell reports from London, the British capital is a center for global finance and travel, so campaigners hope the sanctions will have a substantial impact.
Sergei Magnitsky, a Russian lawyer investigating state corruption, died in a Moscow jail in 2009. His body showed signs of torture. No one has been convicted because of his death. In the decades since, his client, Bill Browder, has fought for governments around the world to enact sanctions against those involved in Magnitsky's demise. The campaign marked a milestone Monday as Britain announced its first targeted sanctions.
Those with blood on their hands, the thugs of despots, the henchmen of dictators, will not be free to waltz into this country to buy up property on the King's Road, to do their Christmas shopping in Knightsbridge, or frankly, to siphon dirty money through British banks or other financial institutions.
25 Russian officials allegedly involved in Magnitsky's death face asset freezes and travel bans, including directors of Russia's investigative committee, which reports directly to President Vladimir Putin, members of the General Prosecutor's Office, as well as judges. Russia has asked Interpol to arrest Bill Browder 7 times on charges of tax evasion. Browder says the charges are baseless and evidence of his campaign success.
Putin values money more than human life, and we've created a mechanism to take his money away from him, and that's just unforgivable as far as he's concerned.
Britain also enacted sanctions Monday against 20 Saudi Arabian nationals accused of the gruesome murder of the American journalist Jamal Khashoggi, who wrote for the Washington Post. Further measures target officials in Myanmar and North Korea. Some British lawmakers are calling for Hong Kong's chief executive, Carrie Lam, to be added to the sanctions list following China's imposition of a new security law, which critics say infringes upon basic human rights, including freedom of speech.
China is probably the prime example of a human rights abuser that should have people sanctioned. They should be stung for what they've done to the Uyghur population, for what they're doing in Hong Kong.
The United States and Canada already have Magnitsky-style legislation in place. The European Union is working on its own.
If the EU is not involved, then these people will buy villas in the south of France. They'll keep their money in German banks, and they'll send their kids to Swiss boarding schools. And so we need to get Europe on board.
Britain says it is determined to forge a new role as a global beacon for human rights. Analysts say the measures will test Britain's clout outside the EU. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. After show of military might, China offers to restart South China Sea talks. United States and China impose reciprocal visa restrictions over Tibet. Pakistan fires 28 pilots for holding dubious licenses. Rights group calls for protection of Hindu minority in Pakistan. U.S. general skeptical that bounties led to troops' death. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia. You can also stop by the voanews.com website. You're listening to VOA Asia. Despite a recent surge in the nation's coronavirus cases, in a series of events at the White House Tuesday, the Trump administration continued its push for schools to reopen for what it says is the holistic health of the nation. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Suara has the story.
In the state of New Hampshire, a school using ski lifts for a graduation ceremony to help maintain social distancing. Just one of the creative measures American schools have taken during the pandemic. But beyond pomp and circumstance, American schools may soon reopen for a new school year. President Trump is demanding that it happen on time in August or September.
We're very much going to put pressure on governors and everybody else to open the schools.
Schools are part of the president's larger plan to resume normal economic function as he eyes his re-election bid in November. Children back in school would allow parents to go back to their workplaces. The more than 50 million children who attend school in the U.S. did so online after the pandemic hit and before their summer vacations. The American Academy of Pediatrics has recommended they return to school in some form to keep them from falling behind, a recommendation supported by infectious disease experts.
I think most of us agree that we have to open up our schools again this fall, but we'll see exactly how to do it. Doing it carefully is very important.
But according to a research by the American Enterprise Institute, only 20% of parents feel safe sending their children back to a school building. Republican parents are twice as likely as Democrats to feel okay doing so. Mixed messaging from federal and state officials on precautions such as masks have contributed to parents' anxiety.
Reopening of schools isn't just purely a decision that's made by governors and superintendents and principals and teachers. It's a decision that parents have to participate in as well. They have to trust that the schools are putting in place the protections that are going to keep their kids safe. And the problem is when you have conflicting guidance, it creates this untenable situation for parents to try to make a decision with varying types of conflicting guidance on whether or not a school should do X, Y, or Z.
While the coronavirus rarely causes illness in children, there is concern they may transmit the virus to family members like they do with the flu.
We don't know that yet about the COVID virus. Does it really infect the children and they can transmit it? Or is it very difficult for this virus to infect children? Those studies are still underway.
Beyond the $13 billion allocated in April to help schools and universities move to online learning, it's unclear whether the federal government plans to provide additional funding to safely reopen schools. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
Happening now in Asia, authorities in Mumbai, India are allowing people to get tested for COVID-19 without a doctor's prescription, with health workers conducting door-to-door testing. You'll have all the latest details on this and many other stories when you stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, companies such as Coca-Cola, Adidas, Ford, and Lego are boycotting Facebook this month, pulling ads that appear on the social network in the United States. Some advertisers are part of an organized boycott demanding the company to do more to crack down on hate speech, conspiracies, and misinformation on its site on topics such as voting. Facebook has responded with some changes, but will it be enough? Michelle Quinn looks into it.
Hundreds of companies say they won't advertise on Facebook and its sister firm, Instagram, in July as part of a campaign called Stop Hate for Profit. The goal? Force Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg to address Facebook's negative effects on society, says Jim Steyer, chief executive and founder of Common Sense Media and one of the boycott's backers.
That they are amplifying hate speech, racist messages, white supremacy messages, all sorts of misinformation and dishonest political advertising. So we asked the major advertisers of America to pause their advertising on the platform for at least a month.
The boycott's demands include asking Zuckerberg to strengthen controls against hate speech and do more to crack down on misinformation campaigns, particularly when it comes to voting. These are all changes that Facebook can make.
It is within their interest to make small changes. They don't want to be blamed for somebody using their platform to manipulate people in an election. But tinkering around the margins of little changes to ensure that doesn't happen is very different from actually taking a step back and saying, is it possible that the core business we built is actually not the best thing for society?
There's no shortage of ideas of how to fix Facebook. Some call for regulations. Others say break up the company and make Zuckerberg, who has controlling shares of the firm, answerable to a board. One idea? Hire ethicists to help with decision-making and give them power in the organization.
I don't think there's any one core set of values. I wish there was. And I wish it was some sense of trying to help the common good or trying to protect human rights or something that really helped them be a guiding principle.
Facebook says it doesn't tolerate hate speech and points to its automated system to remove inflammatory ads before users see them. Recently, the firm agreed to an external audit of how it is doing to make sure advertisers do not appear next to harmful messages, one of the boycott organizers' demands. Facebook also said it would label content that breaks its rules, even those posted by an elected official. And it will remove posts that Facebook thinks may lead to violence or deprive people's right to vote. These are important steps, but some critics argue it's not enough.
Yes, they can change. It's a question of whether they want to. Can they change as long as they continue to pursue being the biggest, most dominant company in the world that absolutely has a monopoly over all conversations, how we get our content, how we connect with people? Possibly not.
The boycott organizers say their campaign is going global, but it will take time before they know if their efforts have a lasting effect. Michelle Quinn, VOA News, Oakland, California.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. An anti-war civic group in South Korea protested outside the Foreign Ministry building in Seoul Wednesday during a visit of a U.S. delegation, calling for peace and an end-of-war declaration. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter, Facebook, and VOA 60. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, the practice of mining precious metals and stones from the earth dates as far back as recorded human history. Right now, rare earth metals are highly sought by China and the United States for their use in high-tech manufacturing. But much earlier civilizations also dug deep into the earth. What they were after and what they left behind yields clues to ancient technological advancement. VOA's Arash Arabasadi reports on a long-lost mineral mining operation in recently discovered underwater caves in Mexico.
Researchers diving into dark submerged caves under Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula found the remains of an ancient mining operation.
La prehistoria.
Prehistory still holds many mysteries for researchers. The mine is one of those discoveries that opens doors and windows to that remote past. It is extraordinary what these Sendak explorers found within these flooded passages, evidence of mining 10,000 years ago.
Roberto Junico is a deputy director at Mexico's National Institute of Anthropology and History. He applauds researchers from Sendak who discovered an ochre mining operation that started 12,000 years ago. Sendak is the Spanish acronym of the Research Center for the Aquifer System of Quintana Roo, the Mexican state that is home to Cancun.
It already allows us to begin to understand some of the dynamics of those early societies. What were they doing with this ochre?
Ochre is a naturally occurring mustard-colored pigment made of sand or clay mixed with an iron oxide. Its color and properties made it popular at the time.
They used it to paint themselves, as some African tribes do today. They used it for medicine because ochre fights bacteria. They used it for symbolism. I love to think that this ochre was the beginning of the first artistic manifestations.
Researchers found tools like hammerstones and pile drivers made of stalagmites. They explored 7 kilometers and more than 100 dives to find this abandoned mine, likely submerged 8,000 years ago amid rising sea levels following the last ice age. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
Coronavirus questions. Can the virus be spread by mosquito bites? Is there a vaccine or medication that prevents it? Is there any medicine that cures it? The answer to all of the questions is no. The best steps to take, wash your hands, cover your cough, stay at home if you are sick or advised to by local authorities.
We're glad you're with us today as we continue with VOA Asia. Under the Diversity Visa Program, tens of thousands of potential immigrants literally rely on the luck of the draw to get the opportunity to legally live and work in the United States without sponsorship from an employer or family member. That program has been temporarily discontinued by the Trump administration because of the COVID pandemic. But for some who applied for and received diversity visas late last year, their search for the American dream has been difficult. VOA's Veena Mubtadi has more.
After obtaining a diversity visa, also known as the Green Card Lottery, Eric Alamshah came to the U.S. from Indonesia at the end of 2019 with his wife Sari and 2 children. He used to work in the IT sector for 8 years in the Indonesian capital, Jakarta. But even with extensive work experience, he still has not been able to find a full-time job.
Out of all the applications I sent, whether retail or other jobs in the IT field, I only get callbacks from essential jobs, like in the pharmacies, grocery stores, and home improvement stores. Maybe I have to put my search on hold to find the other IT jobs.
In the meantime, just to get by, Alamshah is working as a cashier at the Home Depot store, a hardware outlet in the state of Maryland. It's considered an essential business that's still operating in the middle of the pandemic.
Hi, Sai Agnes.
Vinia Agnesia was also a green card lottery winner from Indonesia. She took leave from her final year as a dentistry student in Padang on the island of Sumatra to move to New York City by herself at the end of 2019. With no college degree nor work experience, Agnesia found it difficult to find a full-time job. She worked part-time as a server in a Japanese restaurant for a few months until it was closed due to the lockdown. She found herself unemployed in the U.S. at the epicenter of a pandemic in one of the most expensive cities in the world.
Bukan cuma soal coronanya aja.
My parents are worried about me, not only because of the coronavirus, but financially as well, because I'm unemployed. They are worried thinking how I can get by. And then I told them, don't worry, I'm legal here, so I am eligible to get government assistance.
The assistance she's referring to is the $1,200 stimulus check, as well as the pandemic unemployment assistance. Under the PUA, Agnesia receives about $600 every week, which she uses to pay rent, utilities, food and transportation while searching for work. Meanwhile, the Alamsha family remains optimistic about living a new life in America in the midst of uncertainties. The Alamsha family and Agnesia are some of about 55,000 people that come to the U.S. every year through the Green Card Lottery, many of them now just trying to survive. In Maryland, Fina Muptadi, VOA News.
South Korean pop music, or K-pop, has become a global phenomenon. But the country now wants to also export its police force tactics. Jason Struther in Seoul tells us about K-cops.
When it comes to South Korea's best-known cultural exports, boy bands like BTS may top the list. But if it's up to authorities here in Seoul, the so-called Korean Wave would also include the country's police forces. K-cops have a lot to offer police forces across the globe, says Yol Tae-soo of the Korean National Police Agency.
K-cop wave program.
Yol says the K-cop Wave program is a way for South Korea's police agency to share its experience with other countries and help them improve their police forces and improve cooperation in fighting international crime.
With accolades from around the world, K-pop Wave has become a new chapter in the history of the Korean Wave.
Yol says the KNPA has collaborated with police forces in 110 countries. Through the K-cop program, partners learn how to combat cybercrime and improve technology-based law enforcement. Yol says many developing nations are interested to learn from South Korea's police because of its unique history. He says after the Korean War, the country had nothing and had to rebuild everything. He says they received a lot of help from developed countries like the U.S. and European nations. And he thinks some developing countries see South Korea as a model to follow. But South Korea's cops weren't always seen as a model to follow, says author Michael Breen.
The police had an awful reputation.
In past decades, South Korean police and student activists clashed in violent protests. The police killing of a student protester sparked South Korea's 1987 democracy movement that led to the end of the country's former dictatorship. But Breen says since then, the police agency's image has improved.
There's a gradual sort of scaling back. I think the police years ago realized that the students were violent because of their own police tactics.
Those changes have helped make demonstrations largely peaceful today, like the candlelight protests that led to the impeachment of former President Park Geun-hye in 2017. Kim Jin-hyung of the Korean National Police Agency says protests in South Korea have become peaceful. He says there's a mutual respect between demonstrators and police now. The KNPA says its K-cops are ready to work with global partners to make their protests safer too. Jason Struther for VOA News, Seoul.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Don't forget to find us online at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, all at VOA Asia. We thank you for joining us. We thank our managing editor, Diane Gao, our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Popeboom. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a wonderful day. Be safe. Be well.